We are now beginning a study of the 41st Psalm. The title of this 41st Psalm states that it is a Psalm of David, and it also states that it is directed to the chief musician, which means that the chief musician was to take this psalm and to use it to the very best advantage in the worship of the congregation. Now, we do not know the precise occasion that caused this psalm to be written, but it has a very similar tone to the 38th psalm, and like that psalm, it seems to have been written when the author was suffering under some kind of bodily sickness, probably brought on him by the mental sorrows caused by the ingratitude of his friends, or by those that were nearly related to him. It is certain that his bodily sufferings were either caused or aggravated by the neglect of his friends, by their cold treatment of him, by their ingratitude toward him, by the reports which they circulated in regard to him. And it was this unkindness, certainly, which greatly increased his suffering, and which probably gave occasion to the writing of this psalm. Who the persons were that treated him like this with neglect and coldness cannot now be ascertained, nor is it necessary to know who they were in order to appreciate the meaning and the beauty of the psalm. Their conduct is so accurately and so feelingly described that it would be no particular advantage to be made acquainted with their names. The case, therefore, in the psalm is that of one who is sick, one who is forsaken by his friends, one who is subjected to unkind remarks, alike when they're with him and when they're absent from him, of one, therefore, whose only refuge is God, and who looks to him for sympathy. And we're going to see that we'll get some valuable teaching out of this that applies to us today. There are very few, if any, who go through this life without having to suffer some kind of bodily illness, without having to also suffer a misunderstanding on the part of their friends, in which they may say things, do things, or act in such a way as to not be kind or charitable toward the person in their time of suffering. Another very interesting thing about this psalm is that it also contains a prophecy about the Messiah. A part of it is used by the Messiah to tell what his true condition is on the night that he was betrayed by Judas. And when we get to that portion, we'll try to make a good explanation of it. In the first section of this psalm, we see that he talks about the condition of those who are kind and who are considerate toward those that are sick and toward those that are poor and weak and humble. Although his friends have mistreated him, his friends have not treated him like they should have in his time of distress, he first of all takes time to show the blessedness of those who do act properly toward those that are sick or toward those that are poor. So beginning with the first verse of chapter 41, "Blessed is he that considereth the poor." Now, those that consider the poor are those who care for the poor, those who are concerned about them, those who take time out to give some kind of aid or assistance to them. They're not indifferent. They're not calloused. They certainly do not oppress them anymore. But they have a consideration. They have a kindness toward those that are poor. The poor are those that are weak, or low, or humble, whether they are in this condition because of poverty, because of lack of financial ability, or whether in this condition because of illness, weakness of body. It doesn't really specify and it doesn't really matter. They're in this certain class here that is described in the Bible as poor or humble or weak or low. And the attitude that one has toward these persons, toward this class of people, that attitude is going to determine how God deals with you. He says, "Blessed is he that considereth the poor." He's in this state known as the blessed state, this state of happiness, this state of peace and satisfaction, the state of receiving the benefits of God. And then he proceeds to show in the rest of this verse and the next two verses how the Lord does bless this person, why this person is blessed when he considereth the poor. And what he's actually teaching here is that the Lord will deal with us as we deal with others. We're going to be dealt with by God with the same kind of actions that we deal with others. That's one of the very basic principles of all the Bible. Jesus talks about the day of judgment, in which there we're going to be judged by such things as to whether or not we gave clothing to those who were naked, or gave food to those who were hungry, or visited those who were sick and in prison, or gave hospitality to those who needed it. These simple acts of kindness, of courtesy, of assistance to those who have need, these are the things that God's going to deal with us then in turn as to how we act in those situations. So he says in this first verse, the Lord will deliver him in time of trouble. He's going to be delivered in time of trouble. This word trouble means the day of evil, the time whenever we're in distress, the time when we have need. Now, you know, it matters not how great and how high and how healthy and how much well-being we have at this particular time. There is always that time and that possibility in which we're going to be in a state of distress, when we're going to have a need, and then we're going to need deliverance ourselves. And we may not have anybody to come along and deliver us like we deliver the poor, like we help the poor. But the Lord will. If we've been kind to those who are poor, if we've considered those who are low and humble and weak and in distress, if we've taken our time and our energy to help care for them, and we certainly do have a caring feeling about them, then the Lord will deliver us in time of trouble. When we have trouble, the Lord's going to treat us that same way. We'll be delivered in time of trouble. Now, that's a very comforting thought. He further says in verse 2, the Lord will preserve him and keep him alive. This is simply a further statement of this principle that the Lord is going to reward us the way we deal with others. In this particular case, he says the Lord will preserve him and keep him alive. When he gets to the point that he's in a state of distress, when he's in a state of illness to the point that he may die from it, his life is in jeopardy. He is staring the grave right in the face, so to speak. The Lord will preserve him and keep him alive. Now, this is a general principle. It doesn't mean that it universally is going to be true in every case so that those who help the poor will never die. That's certainly not true. We don't even pretend to believe that or think that that's what this is teaching. But it's teaching a generality. In general, you're going to be blessed on this earth the same way that you deal with these of this poor class. Those who are in the class that cannot help themselves, those who are in a class in which they have definite need and you're able to give them that need, then you're going to be dealt with in the same way, even to the point of the Lord maybe prolonging your life, preserving you and keeping you alive and bringing you through a time of distress in which you have great need and no one but only God is able to help you. He further says, and he shall be blessed upon the earth. Now, to be blessed upon the earth means that you're going to have a state of happiness, a state of peace, a state of tranquility. You're going to enjoy many benefits in this life. Many of the blessings are going to be given you in this life as a reward for your having done this kind deed or having these benevolent acts toward those who are in need. So, you're going to be blessed upon the earth. And that is a very, very great promise. All of the rewards are not going to be reserved for the afterlife, for heaven itself, but many of the rewards are going to be given in this life. And to be blessed upon the earth can include many, many things. It doesn't mean that you have to rise to a state of high prominence or that you have to be a millionaire or that you have to be independently wealthy, but it means that you're going to enjoy the things in this life that God gives you to enjoy. You're going to be in a state of happiness, of peace, a state of tranquility, a state of satisfaction that cannot be equaled by any other condition or any other position in this life than those who have this consideration for the poor. He shall be blessed upon the earth. He further says, and thou wilt not deliver him under the will of his enemies. And this last phrase seems to be put in the form of a prayer to God, that God not deliver him under the will of his enemies. That is, this person is going to be given special protection now from his enemies. Those that want to do harm to him, those who want to bring about some kind of ill toward him, those that are not looking out for his well-being, and those who could care less if he has anything good happen to him, God's not going to deliver him into the will of those people. He's not going to let them take over and be able to dictate and determine of what he has in this life. He'll not deliver him into the will of his enemies. And this is stated in other places in the Bible. I'd like to read one passage, 1 Timothy 4 and 8, where the Apostle Paul makes this statement, for bodily exercise profiteth little, but godliness is profitable unto all things, having promise of the life that now is, and of that which is to come. So godliness, that's what we're talking about here, doing good unto others, treating those that are in a lesser advantageous state than we are, treating them in such a way as to bring about some help toward them. That then is going to be profitable unto all things, not only in this life, but in the life that is to come. And certainly what he's talking about here is this life. We're going to be placed in a position of being blessed. We're going to be in a position of not being in the hands of our enemies. Our enemies are not going to be able to carry out their will toward us. And we'll be preserved and kept alive, and the Lord will deliver in time of trouble. So certainly this opening phrase, blessed is he that considereth the poor, that is a very true and all-sweeping and deep statement here. It's one that we should certainly take strong consideration of, because it is a key to our being happy. It's a key to our being blessed. It's one of the basic fundamental principles of being able to enjoy this life. That is for us to consider the poor, those that are weak, those that are low, those that are humble, those that are in some kind of distress, those that are not able to help themselves. We're to consider them, have a kindness toward them, have a concern for them, and not be cold and callous and indifferent, and certainly not do anything to make their condition worse. He further says along this line in the third verse, the Lord will strengthen him upon the bed of languishing. Thou wilt make all his bed in his sickness. This statement, the Lord will strengthen him upon the bed of languishing, simply indicates that when this person who has shown kindness to the poor, when he gets into the condition in which he is now on the bed of sickness, the word languishing means sickness, when he's on this bed of languishing, when he's on this bed of sickness, the Lord will strengthen him. The word strengthen here really means to support. So what a wonderful thought it is to know that whenever we are down, when we are out, when it seems that there may be no way that we can have any kind of help, the Lord is going to be there to support us when we're on that bed of sickness. And there are times in this life, of course, in which we do not have any other source of help than the Lord. We all, sometime or other, are going to be confronted with a disease or with a problem that man can offer no true help for. Man doesn't have the answer for it. And here we are on this bed of languishing, and the Lord will come to our aid. The Lord will give us support. The Lord will give us strength so that we then can either be healed or we can be able to get through the problem without undue amounts of suffering, pain, or distress. This word languishing not only is translated as sickness, but it can also be translated as that which is sickening, that which is unclean. And so it doesn't have to be limited just to physical illness, but it can be other distresses that would come upon us that can be equally depressing or equally hard to bear. And he further described this in verse 3 by saying, that will make all his bed in his sickness. Now this is a little bit complicated to truly translate this phrase, but he's simply saying that whenever you are sick, that God's going to make your bed. That it, he is going to relieve your suffering. He's going to make you comfortable. He's going to do whatever a diligent and dedicated and skilled nurse might do to make you comfortable. He's going to make your bed. He's going to move your bed. He's going to do whatever he can to arrange things so that you will be comfortable, so that you will be relieved of your suffering. And it's going to be the Lord that does this. You're not going to have to depend upon someone else to do it, but the Lord will do it for you. Now this is very great and very deep principle that's laid down here. And it all is based upon this statement that blessed is he that considereth the poor. The weak, the low, the humble. And it, again, emphasizes to us the importance of our attitude toward those who have lesser benefits than we have. Our attitude toward those who are in need, those who are in distress, those who are in time of trouble. How do we treat them? And the way we treat them is going to be then the way we can expect to be treated by God. How's God going to treat us? If we relieve the discomforts of those who are in distress, those who are in times of need, then we can expect to have our distresses relieved. We can expect God to give us comfort whenever we're in a time of trouble. And it's very, very important then that we know this principle, that we apply it to our lives, because it is one of the very keys, one of the very basic fundamental acts that we must know about and do in order to be pleasing to God. We're going to be judged by what we do in these areas on the judgment day. But this is talking about specifically in this life. And to think about being sick and have to take our place upon the sick bed and have the Lord to come along and to support us or to strengthen us upon this bed of languishing, and have the Lord to make our bed, to arrange things so that we'll be comfortable, to arrange things so that we will not be in the distress that we would have been in without Him, so that we can get through whatever it is ours to get through. If it's going to be God's will for us to get well, then He will arrange it so that we'll get well. If it's God's will for us to not get well, He's still going to make us comfortable. He's going to make us get through this with the least amount of distress and pain. And how wonderful it is to know then that this is the way God deals with us. And so when we encounter those who are less fortunate than we are, those who are poor, those who are in distress, then let's think about this. The way I treat these people may be the very way that I'm going to be treated by God. How do I want to be treated whenever I have need? Do I want God to turn His back on me? Or do I want God to come and to give me strength and to give me comfort and to make my bed so that I then will be given the very best of care in my time of distress? In these first three verses, he makes a very plain case for the fact that those who consider the poor, those who are concerned with taking care of the poor, are blessed and are going to be blessed. Now, in the fourth verse, before he gets into his description of his condition and his problems and his troubles, he remembers a prayer that he gave to God during this time of distress, and he recalls this prayer here. It says in verse 4, "I said, Lord, be merciful unto me. Heal my soul, for I have sinned against thee." Now, it's always well for us to be able to remember our prayers, to remember the things that we said when we were in times of distress. For many times when we get out of our distress, we forget what we did say to God. We forget just how desperate we were. We forget those promises we made to God. We forget our humbleness, our great state of need. And it's well for us to remember this, because this puts us back into a position of having a proper perspective on all. We should have just as close and needful approach to God when we are doing well as we have when we're in some kind of distress. Let's notice what his prayer was. "I said, Lord, be merciful unto me." Of course, we know that he prayed to the one and only God, the one here that he refers to as Lord. He didn't pray to any other spiritual force or any other element, but just to God. "I said, Lord, be merciful unto me." Now, this idea of asking for mercy is a prayer that can be given in every situation. There is no person who rises to such a height that he makes God his debtor. We all need the mercy of God. We never reach that point where we are so good, so where we are so perfect, we are so free of faults and fallacies that we do not need the mercy of God. No man is ready for the judgment day without the mercy of God. So this is an appropriate prayer in every situation. And that's the way David seems to begin his prayer here. "Be merciful unto me." Then he says, "Heal my soul." And this indicates that he had some kind of a sickness. It doesn't tell us specifically what it is, for this phrase, "heal my soul," can be interpreted as a spiritual illness as well as an illness of the body. And certainly we know that spiritual illnesses are of the very worst kind. They require prayer. They require our diligence to get over them just as much as the sicknesses of the body do. Only the problem is many times who are spiritually ill do not recognize this as an illness, and they do not take the appropriate steps to make a correction. "Heal my soul, for I have sinned against thee." Now we see another thing here that's most important, and that is that David connects his illness, he connects his sickness with his sin against God. Now if this were sickness of the soul, in the sense of a spiritual illness, a spiritual sickness, certainly we know that that's very closely connected with some kind of sin. But he connects the sickness, and it more than likely is a sickness of the body in general, he connects it with a sin. So be merciful unto me, heal my soul, for I have sinned against thee. He acknowledges that sin. Now, we've discussed before that this is one of the most basic of all points. We're going to get right with God. We have to acknowledge our sin to God. We have to confess that sin to God. We cannot keep it back. We cannot remain silent. We cannot cover it up and pretend like it doesn't exist. We confess the sin to God, and then we're in a position to have forgiveness of sin and the blessings of God. And that's what David does here. He asks for God's mercy. He asks God to heal him, but he says, I've sinned against thee. He confesses that sin. And so once we can acknowledge our sin to God, this puts us in that state of humility, that state of contriteness, that state of being truly able to then come to God and have God to receive us and to give us the aid that we need. This is a prayer that is truly appropriate for everyone. We all need the mercy of God. We all need to be forgiven of our sins. We all need to confess to God our sins. We all need the healing of the great hand of God. So this is a wonderful little prayer that David gives in this fourth verse. He doesn't try to build himself up at someone else's expense. He doesn't tell God how good he is or how God ought to do this or ought to do that. He simply lays it on the line like it is. I've sinned against thee. Heal my soul. Be merciful unto me. And of course the healing that he would receive from God would certainly be an act of mercy. That's going to close our lesson at this point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.